The special effects are so good now you might think human beings will soon be obsolete in the movie business. But you'd be wrong. Digital photography and home computers are opening up the industry to ordinary people.
One of the exciting things for me about this technology is that, you know, it's up to the filmmakers that are using it now to really set the standards of what is going to happen in the future. Like, no one's really made up the rules yet.
That's Bart Cheever, co-founder of DFilm, a touring digital film festival. Cheever says the primary benefit of this new technology is economic. It's so cheap to make a movie using digital photography that virtually anyone can produce a professional quality film. Even major players like George Lucas are going digital.
It definitely is revolutionizing filmmaking to an extent already. Like, the first time that a digital film was shown in a film festival and competition was in Cannes in 1998. There was a film by a guy named Lars von Trier called The Idiots, and it was shot with a little Sony PC-1 digital camcorder, which is a camcorder that sells for about $1,500. And here it was showing in the main theater next to, you know, films that were shot on 35mm, very high production value films. And because the digital cameras are pretty high quality, it was able to hold up. And now if you look at the Sundance Film Festival that happened last year, something like 43% of all the films that were submitted were shot with these mini DV camcorders. So you see, in a course of just 2 years, the technology really being rapidly adopted by filmmakers. And the reason why is because it's so much less expensive to shoot on digital video stock than it is to shoot on film stock.
How does the quality of the digital image compare to the quality of standard film stock?
The quality is not as good as film yet, but it's rapidly emerging. And I think we're going to see a case within 10 years where digital video is very close, if not indistinguishable, from regular film stock.
What's the difference?
The difference is cost primarily. Like, if you look at The Phantom Menace by George Lucas, they think they shot on 35mm stock, and it cost them something like $1.5 million just in the price of film stock. And they estimated that if they shot on digital video instead, the price would have been $15,000. So, you know, you see there's a tremendous saving to the filmmaker, and that's, you know, important for someone like George Lucas, but it's very important for someone that's, you know, just making films on an independent level.
One of the things I read about it is that it will be incredibly cheaper for the filmmaker, but not necessarily for those who are going to show the film. The investment in the equipment that will put this in front of the public is apparently fairly substantial.
The projectors are going to be expensive for the theater owners. For the actual studios, though, I mean, they spend several million dollars on prints, just getting, you know, thousands of prints across the country. So if they're able to just beam a film to a theater and have it exist on a hard drive somewhere in the projection booth, it's going to be a huge savings for the studios. And that's one of the things that's sort of holding up projectors being used on a widespread basis. But I think that'll be worked out eventually.
What about those small theaters that can't afford to put in digital technology? Are they going to be stuck in the past if the digital revolution takes over?
No, I don't think so, because the price is coming down on these projectors. And you see, even now, digital projectors that are being sold for people for business presentations and so on. So,
are there things that you'll be able to do with digital filmmaking that you can't do with standard filmmaking?
It's up to the filmmaker and how they actually use the technology. But I think the main difference is that films are going to be shot for much less money, and it's going to mean that a lot of new people will be able to make film that have always been shut out of the entire process. I spoke at the Norwegian Film Institute last year, and a lot of Norwegian filmmakers were really interested in this technology because there's only something like 3 million people in the entire country of Norway, I think. So it never made sense for them to spend $1 million on a film that, you know, could never really recoup. And as a result, all the films that were coming out of Norway were shot in English. They were about subject matters that would be important to people all over Europe. So now if you think a filmmaker can make a film for $50,000, $100,000, all of a sudden those filmmakers can make films about subjects that are important to Norwegian people in Norwegian. And there's a sense that, like, a very important part of the culture is not going to be lost.
So the storytelling is going to be one of the great beneficiaries of this change in technology.
I think so, and I think that's really what happens when this technology trickles down outside of the community of professional filmmakers in Hollywood and really starts to get into the hands of ordinary people. I mean, we've heard about this before with the Super 8 camera and the Video Portapack, but I mean, now computers are in half of all homes in America, and I think for the first time these filmmaking tools are really going to be available to a large part of the general population.
Okay, but tell me again about the look then. You think that there will continue to be a difference between the look of digital filmmaking and filmmaking as we've known it up to this point?
Right.
Why? What kinds of things?
Well, video is much better at capturing vibrant colors, and film has a much more subdued, rich, deep sort of palette to it.
What we'd call warmth.
Warmth, exactly. It's a matter of what, you know, the filmmaker is looking for in the film, and it's also a matter of what the public is just accustomed to. Now, if I go to see a film in a multiplex with my girlfriend on the weekend, it's like, you know, I notice a lot of things, like the way the film jumps around, the way the film stock is scratched up and things like that. And it's almost like, you know, you come to prefer the look of a digitally projected work as opposed to film.
I suppose this is like CDs and LPs, isn't it? You're gonna right. concentrate on not hearing the pops and scratches.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
Is the impact of this, do you think, going to be in the theaters, or is it going to be more in people's homes?
Yeah, I do think that the long-term impact is really going to be in the people's homes. I mean, there's been three waves of this revolution. The first one was big-budget Hollywood films like Jurassic Park and the first Star Wars movie, where people were, you know, using digital special effects to create really entirely new types of looks. And the second sort of wave is what we're seeing now, which is Sundance and the independent feature film market, where we have, you know, almost half of all the films being shot with digital cameras. I think the third wave is what's going to happen when really people in the mass market start to adopt this technology to make short, very special interest films about their lives, you know, things that are important to them but maybe wouldn't be important to a lot of other people.
You know, we're told that it's not just a matter of having money and a camera. You got to have something more than that, don't you?
In terms of actually learning the equipment, one of my partners in the film festival used to work at the Children's Museum setting up digital film showcases and workshops. And it's amazing. I mean, I visited him in one of the classes, and you'd see these 8 or 9 year old kids, and they'd pick up a digital camera, and then they'd sit down for about a half hour, and he'd show them how to use a software program like Final Cut Pro. And within an hour, you know, they were up and running, like, you know, don't bother us. We don't need any more help. You know, we already know how to do this. So, you know, it does take a little perseverance and persistence to learn the gear, but it's really not something that's outside of most people's grasps. Beyond that, it's up to the filmmaker themselves what they do with it.
So you're really saying that in terms of the technology involved, just about anybody can do this. Now, that, of course, means that you're going to have an awful lot of things that nobody really wants to see, aren't you?
I guess. I mean, we're used to seeing, you know, 50 films come out of Hollywood every year that appeal to like a lowest common denominator. And I think it's like the magazine industry. You know, there used to be one or two big magazines like Time or Look that were big national magazines. And now if you go to a newsstand, there's, you know, just an incredible range of magazines for every sort of niche interest. And I think that's really where we're going with filmmaking. I mean, maybe the films that we see might not appeal to you or me, but there might be a small audience out there that is interested in them.
What do you think this means for the Hollywood studio system?
The type of stuff that we show in D-Film is really outside of that whole phenomenon. People are still going to want to go and see big-budget entertainment with big stars, you know, created by professional storytellers. But I think what this is going to mean in the long term is that there'll be a lot of other people that can be included in the process. There'll be a whole nother wave of filmmaking that's completely outside of Hollywood.
If you'd like to check out some examples of digital filmmaking, point your web browser to dfilm.com. Bart Cheever is one of D-Film's founders.